Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you could have first heard this episode 9 months ago if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that will get right on your tics.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Here we go. Here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go. This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sam Nifty Delaney, so what?
It's part three of the Twits Odyssey. We are deep diving into Roald Dahl's classic. Well, I was going to say a children's book, but it's a book for everyone who can manage to tolerate the outpourings of a rancid anti-Semite like Roald Dahl. But it's for everyone, the Twits, and that's what we're trying to do here. Because this podcast isn't really for kids, is it?
It's fucking mad, really, the Twits. I mean, we've spent the first couple of episodes of this just railing against Roald Dahl because in recent times it's come to our attention that he was an awful, awful man. Mm. But having said that, the Twits is a great book, and that's why we find ourselves here.
It's that old
I mean,
thing.
Michael Jackson was a nonce, but if you think there are any albums better than Off the Wall, then I'll fight you.
It's that old thing, innit? Love the art, hate the artist.
Yeah.
And we do love the Twits, and we do hate Roald Dahl.
And would you put the Twits up there in the cultural, on the cultural level of Off the Wall?
It's probably the Off the Wall of children's books, I think.
Yeah. Similar. I don't know when it was first published. Off the Wall was about 1980.
79, wasn't it? Off the Wall. This is very similar time.
79. Let's have a look here. 1980. Yeah, well, there was something in the air at the time. I bet if you do a bit of a search through the picture libraries, you will find a picture of Michael Jackson and Roald Dahl hanging out together in the VIP area of Studio 54.
Studio 54. I knew exactly what you were going to say there.
Yeah.
Dahl's helicopter on the roof.
With weirdly, Andy Warhol and Grace Jones as well. It was a crazy time. It was a crazy time. Like, Grace Jones was there in the most outrageous fashions. Warhol... I mean, Roald Dahl was working on the Twits at the time, and I remember him coming to me and him saying, Michael, I'm working on a tremendous book about two assholes stuck in a toxic, dysfunctional marriage. And I said, whoa, that sounds wild, man. I'm working on a disco pop album that's going to change the music industry. And we just realized there was so much overlap in our creative thinking in that time.
And that night in Studio 54, he came along, and I had my monkey with me, Bubbles. And then our relationship cooled a year later or so because the Twits came out, and there was a monkey in the story called Mugglewump. And I thought, that monkey's based a little bit on Bubbles. I don't like this. And we had some conversations, and our lawyers got involved, and we didn't speak after that. It was a sad time.
All I was asking for was 15% of our royalties associated with the book.
Ooh.
And Roald didn't like that. So things declined. But for that brief moment in the late 70s, early 80s, we were so creatively aligned. We talked even, he was going to do a guest vocal. You know, I made Thriller and we ended up getting Vincent Price to read the scary bit in Thriller. But originally that was supposed to be Roald doing it. And if you listen to the early demos, which Quincy still has in his archive, it's Roald Dahl reading the scary bit. But after we fell out, he withdrew our right to use it, so we had to use Vincent Price.
In the end...
What's his name? Yeah, go on.
In the end, I did get my 15% of the royalties from the Twits, and I spent it all on buying up the publishing for Paul McCartney and the Beatles, which ruined another relationship of mine. But there you go. That's business. You know he did that, didn't you?
That's business, I
Jackson
suppose.
Jackson bought up the fucking Beatles publishing.
Yeah, he bought the publishing rights to all of them, didn't he? But the thing was, he was spending money he didn't have. He was in masses of debt. He got carried away with, like, because Thriller made so much, sold so many, he wasn't really listening to his financial advisor. He just heard, all he heard was, you're the richest man in the world and can afford to do anything or ever.
So I thought I would.
They said, well, there is a limit to your wealth, Michael. Shut up, don't say that. I'm going to buy all the Beatles songs.
You just told me I had infinite money and now you're saying I don't.
Michael Jackson and Roald Dahl. Rod Temperton wrote the bit, you know the bit that Vincent Price says in Thriller, which I'll just quickly look up because I can't remember what he says.
Rod Temperton,
says,
of course, was from Yorkshire, wasn't he?
He was a Grimsby fish filleter.
Yeah.
He worked in a fish filleting factory in fucking Grimsby.
Yeah.
And then he was like, have you hear him interviewed? He was hardly ever interviewed, but you can see, there is a radio show that was made on Radio 2 about 10 years ago or more, where they got a rare interview with him talking about his story.
Inside Rod Temperton.
And he was like, you know, it's the way he talks. He goes, yeah, so, you know, the only jobs in Grimsby at the time were like, it was actually somewhere near Grimsby, like, is it Cleethorpes? I'm not sure.
I think it was, anyway, yeah.
And he goes, oh, you know, and so I was fed up with that, but I always liked music. So anyway, I became a session musician. I went to Germany. And I was working as a session musician. I met a lovely bunch of lads who were soldiers, American soldiers. They called themselves Heatwave. And they asked me to fill in on keyboards. And I ended up writing a couple of songs for them. Right? Groove lines and fucking... I mean, the Rod Temperton story is a story that I was trying to make a documentary about for years before he died, and I was trying to make contact with him, which was extremely difficult.
I was going to say, did you reach him or not?
No. I had... Do you know what I did? I had a letter that I wrote to him hand-delivered to his house in Los Angeles by someone because he was so difficult to get hold of. In terms of, he was quite reclusive and he didn't like attention.
You had to deliver it like a summons almost.
It was like you've been served papers by Sam Delaney, Britain's best journalist. I wrote him a letter saying, please do this, you have to do it. Yeah. It's like the world needs to know.
You have to do it. I, Sam Delaney, insist you tell your story to the world.
But if you think about it, I thought to myself, when he was still alive, I think he died about 2016. When he was still alive, he was second only, maybe only to Paul McCartney, maybe the Gibbs, in terms of the amount of records his songs had sold. And most people hadn't heard of him. So, anyway, Rod Temperton, we could be here all day talking about Rod Temperton, and we will do an episode about him. But
Before the Lampards get involved, I'll add that Cleethorpes isn't in Yorkshire, it's in Lincolnshire. You know, because
that's
the kind of thing.
And,
they love the fucking.
The other day, I said Shakespeare wrote A Tale of Two Cities.
I was only a few centuries
out on that one.
Yeah, we'd had communication about that, correcting us on that from someone.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Fucking
I know.
I'll tell you what.
I know.
I'll tell you what.
I didn't even respond because I thought to myself, why doesn't he just sack himself as a listener? Because he should know that that's not on.
If you want to fucking get in touch about every little detail that we happen to get wrong on this podcast, also get in touch with every little detail that enhances your life or that you like or that you think's really good. Tell us everything good if you're going to tell us everything that's wrong.
You wouldn't have time, would you? If you were going to correct all the factual inaccuracies on this podcast, it would be a full-time job. I mean, almost nothing we say is factually correct, to be fair. Anyway, the bit where he goes, I'm just looking for the bit that he goes, in ghostly gauze, the midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize your neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down. I never noticed that lyric before.
Fantastic.
Must stand and face that. So what he's saying is, if you're not up for getting down, then you must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell.
Not unreasonable. If you're not up for getting down, then fuck off.
Listen, we're having a fucking disco. And if you're the sort of cunt who's going to sit around saying, oh, I don't like dancing, just sitting there supping your ale, right? Then I'm afraid you're going to have to face the hounds of fucking hell. That's right. Mad demonic dogs are going to fucking rip you to shreds. That's what the stakes are here.
And there is no appeals process, so do not attempt to try and question me.
He got a taxi over to Quincy Jones's studio. Quincy Jones knew Vincent Price's wife for some reason.
Right.
And he's gone, it's Quincy Jones. We need to get someone to do a real scary voice. Michael Jackson's new hit single. Your husband, I seen him in all those scary, spooky movies. And they said, all right, yeah, he'll come down. He'll come down for an hour, right? So they said, great, get him down. So he's turned up and Rod Temperton is on his way from the hotel to Quincy Jones' studio in a taxi, which when you hear Quincy Jones being interviewed about it, he finds hilarious because in LA, apparently no one gets taxis. They all have cars. This guy, this British guy with the funny voice, he didn't even have a car. He was in a taxi coming over, right, laughing his head off. And he's like, Rod Temperton's like, yeah, well, I got a call. And I said, look, Vincent Price is coming over to the studio today. And you got to have him say something all spooky-like, you know, like it's a voiceover from a spooky film. Have you got anything? And I thought, well, I've got nothing. I'd only just finished writing the lyrics to Thriller, right? And he goes, so I got in the cab and I just had a pen and a notepad and I wrote it on the way over. And he literally wrote it in the back of the cab, got there, tore the piece of paper off the notepad and gave it to Vincent Price.
Read this.
Pricey boy. Yes. I want you to read this. Yes.
Read this, you sporty cunt.
When Michael stopped his singing, you read this out and then fuck off. What a fucking collection of lunatics, right?
Here's 50 quid.
Michael Jackson's there. Well, keep it fucking waiting. We got enough fucking dough, haven't we? That's Quincy. He's the one handling the cash.
Quincy will take it out of petty cash.
Quincy, where's the petty cash? This spooky cunt. He's fucking taking forever. My cabbie needs more dough to hang about because I've got to get back to hotel.
That metal box over there in the corner has got Thriller Petty Cash written on it on a label.
How much is in it? There should be between $40 and $50. Because we got a takeaway last night, right? We had to get a Chinese sent over because we weren't late.
There's every album that gets me and I have a petty cash tin.
Yeah, of course it does.
I hope so. They should all be on eBay. Now you can buy the petty cash tin from Thriller.
$40,000. Yeah. Fucking hell, though. What a collection that was that day. You got Michael Jackson in his singing booth. Then you got Quincy Jones, who, let's be honest, is fucking off his rocker. I don't know if you read any of those interviews that Quincy Jones did a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But Jesus Christ, the man is a lunatic genius. Yeah. And then you've got Luke Quincy Jones, when he talks about his childhood, said they were so poor, he literally ate rats. We were so poor, our mother would send us down to the river and we'd just catch rats and we'd kill them with a brick and then eat them. Fucking hell. Anyway, they got Vincent Price, the spooky cunt from all the scary films, Michael Jackson, Quincy Jones and fucking Rod Temperton, the fish filleter from Cleethorpes, right, who's turned up with his spooky lyrics. He talks about in this documentary, he goes, Quincy Jones, I've been in Heatwave for a while. We'd had a few hits, right? And he goes, I got a call one day. And I said, it's Quincy Jones. I thought it was a wind-up, Quincy Jones. He got through, he said, he goes, it's Quincy Jones here. I've been asked to make Michael Jackson's next solo album and I am looking for songs. I like the work you have done on for Heatwave. Would you like, because he wrote Boogie Nights. Boogie Nights.
He did, bit, yeah.
I mean, a man from Cleethorpes who'd worked in a fish factory Yeah, I've got this song. It's called Boogie Nights.
Boogie Nights.
And always and forever. Anyway, he's gone. So he said, I tell you what, write us three songs, right, and I'll pick the best one. So I said, all right, I'll give it a crack. So I went off and wrote three songs. I sent it to him. He used all three. That's what he says. He says it like that. He goes, he used all three of them.
He knocked me for six.
Literally how he talks. It's fucking incredible.
I'm trying to see if I can find it. It doesn't seem to be on YouTube. There's a 1981 interview with him, with Robbie Vincent, but I can't find the Radio 2 one, which is a tragedy.
It'll unless be out this summer, because I heard it about 5 years ago. I found it on YouTube, I think.
It might still be on BBC Sounds, I don't know. Rod Temperton Radio 2.
Yeah, I got in touch with the bloke who made the documentary. I said I want to make a TV documentary about this cunt.
I want to do what you've done. All this hard work you've put in, right, to make this radio documentary. I want that, but I'm going to do it on the telly with faces and everything.
I offered him like a job on it. I said, "Do you want to team up on this and we'll do it?" Mm. And he went, "Oh, it's a fucking nightmare because he won't talk to anyone. He's a fucking recluse. He's like J.D. Salinger of disco music. He's just holed up in his fucking amazing mansion in Hollywood."
The Invisible Man, the Rod Temperton story. It's on. It was on.
That's it.
Fucking hell, it hasn't been on for years. Okay. That's something to look forward to.
I'll try and dig out the email, see the bloke who can get it over to me, and then we'll point the cameras in the right direction, because I can tell you it's fucking life-changing. And don't forget, I mean, the other songs that he wrote, it wasn't just those, it wasn't just Heatwave and Michael Jackson. I mean, fuck me, I think he wrote George Benson, Give Me the Night.
I'm just looking on his Wikipedia now. He wrote Michael McDonald's Sweet Freedom, which is a classic. Yeah. Yarmo Be There, James Ingram and Michael McDonald.
Yarmo Be There.
Yeah. And what else?
On Off the Wall, he wrote Rock With You and Off the Wall and Burn This Disco Out. Mm-hmm. Those were the three songs. He wrote Stomp by the Brothers Johnson. I mean, he wrote about half of my all-time top 20 songs. Yeah, we're going to stomp all night.
Fucking
Light Me Up. Give me the Night by George Benson. Fucking hell, just Give Me the Night. Herbie Hancock, Get Into the Good Part. Donna Summer, Love Is in Control. Thriller, a little song called Thriller. Baby Be Mine, which is my favourite song on Thriller. He wrote that. The Lady in My Life, You Will Always Be. That's probably my second favourite song on that album.
It looks like someone's put it on Mixcloud, the documentary.
Jalapeño.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jalapeño.
This bloke, I'm not even exaggerating when I'm doing the impression the way he talks. Yeah, so, you know, then I was approached by Donna Summer. And she said, can you write me a disco hit? And I said, I'll give it a go. Right?
I've got me pen here. Hang on. Give me that one.
These are the most soulful fucking songs of all time. It's fucking incredible.
Right, anyway.
And when you see him performing with Heatwave, just lastly, that's really funny as well, because Heatwave was a band made up of, like, US Marines, right, who were stationed in Germany. And in their spare time, they would play in a band, right, a sort of a soul disco band. And he literally just got a gig filling in one night, but he's like, they're all really cool looking. They're all black, right?
Mm.
And they're all American. And they're all strapping soldiers. And here's this quite unhealthy looking bloke from Lincolnshire, right? Mm. White, skinny, pockmarked face. And they ask him to come in. It was in the days when disco acts all wore sort of matching jumpsuits in snazzy colours with glitter on. And he's in one of those playing the keyboards. And he's just so out of place. They're all dancing around. He's there. But he was the guy who turned them from an also-ran band into a fucking chart-topping band. Because he went, oh, I've written a few songs of my own. After a few weeks, he went, I've written a few songs of my own. If you're interested in recording, they said, okay, let us have a look. It's fucking Boogie Nights.
Yeah, the documentary is on Mixcloud in two parts. So I'll try and remember to put the links out for that. Or just go on Mixcloud and just search Invisible Man Rod Temperton. Do it yourself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Best thing you could do, really.
Fuck's sake. Right.
So the twits.
Where are we up to?
The frog. They're at a bit with the frog.
It's the frog. Yeah. So she's dropped the glass eye in his beer. He's fucked off by that. He's decided he's going to put a frog in her bed. And of course we decided, we talked about them having separate beds. We covered all that in the last episode. So Mr. Twit caught a big frog down by the pond and carried it back secretly in a box. As he did.
Going to carry this frog back secret in this box.
So what's in the box?
Fucking nothing. Fuck off. Is it really hard? It's one of the hardest animals to keep a secret, isn't it? A frog. Unpredictable cunts.
It's got to be a box with a very tight lid. But don't forget to put air holes in it as well, boys and girls.
Exactly. Hope it doesn't fucking suffocate.
Yeah. Always put air holes in all your boxes. Doesn't matter what you keep in them, just in case.
Yeah.
That night, Mrs. Twit is in the bathroom getting ready for bed. So she doesn't like to undress in front of him. She goes to the bathroom to do that.
Keep your fucking prying eyes off me ass, you dirty bugger.
Don't go get the ideas, you scruffy cunt. He slipped the frog between her sheets. Then he got into his own bed and waited for the fun to begin. She came back and climbed into her bed and put out the light. She lay there in the dark, scratching her tummy. Her tummy was itching, it says. Dirty old hags like her always have itchy tummies. What a sentence, Mr. Dahl. Dirty old hags like
really
her
horrible.
Always have itchy tummies. Fucking hell. Then all at once she felt something cold and slimy crawling over her feet. She screamed. What's the matter with you? Mr. Twit said. Help! Help! Screamed Mrs. Twit, bouncing about. There's something in my bed! I'll bet it's that giant skilly wiggler I saw on the floor just now. Mr. Twit said, a giant skilly wiggler. What the fuck's a skilly wiggler? The what? She screamed. He says, I tried to kill it, but I got away. It's got teeth like screwdrivers. he's making
you
no
should see the
help.
Picture that Quentin Blake has drawn of him as well. He's in bed with his big beard hanging out the duvet, and he's just got this right shifty smirk on his face as well. So he's looking at her freaking out, and he's like, oh wow, I wonder what that is. How did that get there?
And he says, I tried to kill her, but I got away. Did he fuck? And he says, she says, help. Save me, it's all off of my feet. He goes, it'll bite off your toes. So he tried to kill it previously. He knows now where it is, apparently. He's making no effort to help. He's just going, your toes are gone. Say bye-bye to your toes, love.
Kiss goodbye, toes. I hope you don't fucking use them much.
It's a fucking skilly wiggler. It'll have them all off. And then she fainted. Mr. Twit got out of bed and fetched a jug of cold water, which he pours all over Mrs. Twit's head to revive her. The frog crawled.
This'll wake you up.
Jug of water. See this in the movies. The frog crawls up from under the sheets to get near the water and started to jump about on the pillow. Frogs love water, says Roald Dahl. This one was having a good time. What can I put about the frog? Ah, it loves water. It's having a good time. Whatever. Frog's not important.
I'm not going to go into a big one about the frog. I mean, a frog's a frog. The kids can fill in the gaps in their fucking heads. Started jumping about, you know. It's a jumper.
Water. Yeah. Pop up. When Mrs. Twit came to, the frog had just jumped on her face. And then it states the obvious again. This is not a nice thing to happen to anyone in bed at night. True. She screamed again. And Mr. Twit fucking wades in again. By golly, it is a giant skilly wiggler, he says. It'll bite off your nose. As well as your toes. Mrs. Twit leapt out of bed and flew downstairs and spent the night on the sofa. The frog went to sleep on her pillow.
So, it looks really happy, that frog, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? It's having a nice sleep.
But people always think, I mean, a frog, a maligned animal, you know, because no one, I don't want to see it. I don't know how many dealings you've had with frogs, but one time in my old house, it was pissing down with rain. And I'm sure there'll be campers who've had similar experiences because I've heard a few. And we went out in the hallway. I think my daughter went out and she screamed. And there was a big, it might have even been a toad because it was a fat cunt. And it was just there in our hallway. No one knew how the fuck it had got in because the door hadn't been open and no one knew what it was doing there. And it was sat there just perfectly still because it was probably shitting itself thinking, where the fuck am I?
Well, exactly,
I'm supposed to be on a lily pad in a fucking pond, not in this suburban household. Do you know what I mean?
Or riding an old jalopy around a country estate.
Exactly. What am I doing here? This is shit. The floor's made out of wood. It smells of chips. There's fucking, I can hear the X Factor playing on telly. This is not the way of the frog.
This is not a
natural frog environment. This is a shit human life. But I've got to get out of here. But unfortunately, I'm fucking frozen still with my nerves now. But
I got this morning.
Mate,
what to do a nice day's frogging. All was going well, and now this. How do I get out of
this? Awful. They're so probably going to fucking... Thank fuck I'm not in France or the cunts would be killing and eating me.
Having my legs off. They'll probably put me in a box with no fucking air holes in it next.
They run about... frogs turn up a lot when it pisses down rain. My cousin reckons that it pissed down with rain for 24 hours solid and he walked into his conservatory area in his house, the extension bit, and he reckons there was about 100 frogs in there.
What? 100?
Yeah. They're all jumping around. He didn't fucking know how they'd got there. Don't know. They appear when it rains heavily. They appear and they seem to be able to... I mean, you'll think I'm joking, but I do think that they seem able to, like, pass through walls.
Yeah, I think they
use osmosis or something. I think they can do that.
Yeah. Shapeshifters, perhaps.
Well, if it rains a lot, a frog can gain access to your property. And I bet you any money that campers will be in touch telling me similar stories.
Yeah. I wonder if frogs are actually in the rain clouds and they get, you know, raining cats and dogs is actually Cockney rhyming slang for frogs.
Couldn't it? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's right, actually. That could be true.
We were in Florida in 2014, I think it was, and in the hotel room one day, went into the bathroom. And there, just sitting in the bottom of the shower, baby frog, which had come up, presumably, through the shower drain. How? No fucking idea, but there you go. Frogs.
Okay.
God's
raining
biggest
frogs.
Mystery.
Yeah, they are. Raining frogs. It's raining birds and frogs. Animal phenomena are surprisingly common. Right, here we go. This is in... Let me just see. Raining frogs. Immortalised in the scene in Paul Thomas Anderson's film Magnolia.
Oh, yeah.
Famously long, pretentious film.
Yeah.
The explanation behind raining frogs is similar to that fish. In another fairly common occurrence, horrified residents of Raxaflava, Hungary, home of my in-laws, where strange things happen constantly, where Hungary, the country where fucking strange is the normal, is the norm. Right. Received a frog shower in a thunderstorm last June. In the Bible's book of Exodus, God cast down a rain of frogs on the Egyptians. Here, have that! For their refusal to free the Israelites. Free the fucking Israelites or see what happens. Right. I've warned you. Here come some fucking frogs out of the sky.
Boff! There it is!
Leading to it becoming a popular narrative device when exploring themes of forgiveness and redemption, such as in Magnolia. Right, the explanation of fish coming out. When winds are strong enough, particularly in thunderstorms, small whirlwinds and mini tornadoes can form, which pick up a fish or a frog,
when travelling over water, carrying them for miles before dropping the peculiar cargo on top of baffled populations. That is amazing, isn't it?
Peculiar cargo. That's a Steely Dan album, isn't it? I think that's Steely Dan's fourth album, Peculiar Cargo.
We are Peculiar Cargo. They're a great 1970s yacht rock band, Peculiar Cargo, aren't they?
So, where are we?
This is one of the most famous and best chapters next, The Wormy Spaghetti. Everyone remembers this one, don't they?
Yeah. It's 2.5 pages long as well. Three illustrations in it.
He's really gone to town.
The next day, to get him back, she goes out in the garden, digs up some worms, which in itself is not easily done. She's put a shift in here. She chose big, long ones and put them in a tin, carried the tin back to the house under her apron. More secrets between the two of them. At 1 o'clock, she cooked spaghetti for lunch and she mixed in the worms with the spaghetti, but only on her husband's plate. The worms didn't show because everything was covered with tomato sauce and sprinkled with cheese. I usually imagine I'm eating worms when I eat spaghetti.
Is that what you think about?
Yeah, that's what I think, yeah. It enhances it for
me. Yeah, it wouldn't put me off. I've always thought worms do look quite
very juicy,
tasty.
Don't they? Yeah.
There was a song, isn't there, Think I'll Go and Eat Worms?
Is there?
Yeah. Mm. It goes something like, nobody likes me, everybody hates me, think I'll go and eat worms.
That's new to me.
By someone with very low self-esteem.
Yeah. So, hey, my spaghetti's moving, cried Mr. Twit, poking it around in it with his fork. She explains this by saying, it's a new kind. It's called squiggly spaghetti. It's delicious. Ooh. Eat it up while it's nice and hot. Fucking get it down here, you cunt.
he doesn't give a shit. He's so greedy. Yeah. I mean, I'd fall for something like that because I eat quite, like, I'm a greedy eater.
You just eat anything that's put in front of you, will you?
If dinner's put in front of me, I will just demolish it. I'll eat first, think later.
He starts eating it, twisting the long tomato-covered strings around his fork and shoveling them into his mouth. Soon there was tomato sauce all over his hairy chin. Well, he'll lick that off later on, won't he? Mm. It's not as good as the ordinary kind, he said, talking with his mouth full. It's too squishy. She says, I find it very tasty. He says, I find it very bitter. It's got a distinctly bitter flavour. Buy the other kind next time. Fucking hell. Buy it yourself, you cunt. And then she waits till he's eaten the whole plate full and she says, you want to know why your spaghetti was squishy? And he wipes the tomato sauce from his beard. Why? And why it had a nasty bitter taste? Why? He said. Because it was worms! Cried Mrs. Twitch. Get in there. Clapping her hands and stamping her feet on the floor and rocking with horrible laughter.
She's absolutely there, delighted.
Son. Look at his fucking face.
He can't believe it. He's been rocked to his very core. He's not angry, he's just alarmed. Well, and she is fucking pissing herself.
You know, in the cold light of day, he won't be that bothered, will he? He's eating some worms. I'm sure he's eating worse.
It's all natural. But, I don't mean you'd get ill from eating worms. I mean, protein, innit?
She cooked them, I think, didn't she? So it's all right. It's all good. So there we are. We'll leave it there because after that, the next chapter is the funny walking stick.
Another very memorable one. We're getting right into the meat of the book now, aren't we? These are the things that people remember. This is really like, people say gaslighting was introduced culturally by the film Gaslight, which I think was from the 1940s. Mm. But it's a play, I think, and then it became a film.
Right.
But actually, I think what really popularised gaslighting was the Twits,
wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah, Roald Dahl's behind it. So,
but listen, don't gaslight in real life. It's awful. Don't gaslight your life partner or anyone else. No. I've seen it done, and it's not nice.
Exactly.
I was accused of it last year. Because we employed a pipsqueak to do some work for us.
Yes, I'm familiar with this story.
He didn't turn up properly because he was a fucking millennial who doesn't turn up for weird fucking reasons and just didn't fucking do the job. So in the end, we said, listen, you let us down really badly. So we're not going to leave you in the lurch, but there's no way we can pay you the full amount because you had the right piss. Next thing you know, he said, you're gaslighting me. You're trying to send me mad. We're not, mate. We're just not paying you properly because you didn't do the job properly. Look, that's not gaslighting. That's just fucking capitalism.
There's the email where we told you where to be at a certain time for how long. And there's you emailing us back saying you weren't there. You didn't go. So that's not gaslighting.
You weren't there because you were having a kip or you had an headache or you decided it wasn't necessary. But anyway, I still want the money. Yeah, so you got to watch out.
I had a headache because I was gaslighted by somebody else.
Yeah.
I'm now locked in a gaslighting circle.
Fucking hell. All right, that's it from this one. Back with more next week. Thanks for listening. Take the FN, dickheads.
See you, dickheads. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.